This week on Three Questions with Corey Kareem.
Question, do you worry?
I do.
You were programmed to worry.
How was I programmed to be worried?
You didn't pop out of the room knowing how to worry. Mm-hmm. Well, so go back to when you were 6 months, 1, 2 years old. You didn't know how to worry. You were taught. So you were programmed to worry. And there's only two reasons why people worry. Number one, they're programmed. And the second reason is lack of trust. You can't trust and worry at the same time. Which one are you choosing?
Now, before we get started with this beautiful conversation, please help a brother out and click on that follow button on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Enjoy the conversation. Welcome back, guys. Welcome back to another episode of Three Questions with Corey Kareem, the podcast where we sit down with some amazing people who are doing some amazing things. And that's right. You guessed it. We ask them three questions, sometimes four, sometimes five, six, seven, eight, nine. I know. But rather than just talk about their wins and their successes, we tend to start the conversation around their failures, more specifically the lesson that they learned from those individual experiences. So with that being said, my guest today is a self-proclaimed happiness expert and inner peace practitioner. That's right, y'all. You heard me correctly. Well, you might be asking yourself, how or what does that even mean? Well, through her practice, my guest teaches people like you and I what she has learned about happiness and, most importantly, how to sustain it even during our darkest moments. She holds a Bachelor of Science degree in psychology and has decades of education and training on topics from spirituality to human behavior. She also is the host of a reality spirituality radio show that airs every Sunday morning that focuses on how to experience inner peace, contentment, and of course, happiness. Lastly, she is often quoted as saying, happiness is a practice skill. So without further ado, Rebecca L. Norrington, welcome to the podcast.
Ooh, it is a pleasure to be here. It's happiness specialist. But happiness, you know, I could throw in expert, same thing. Isn't the same thing? Yes. And when I talk about happiness, I just want to be very clear. It's not about something happens and now I'm happy. Mm-hmm. I mean a personal vibration, a personal energy of contentment. Everybody gets that word contentment. So it's about how to maintain and sustain that energy of contentment regardless of what happens. And the good news is, you said it already, happiness is a practice skill. Inner peace is a practice skill. Contentment is a practiced skill. And if I can do it, anyone can do it. It just comes down to prioritizing and making a commitment.
I love it. So I see we're getting straight into this, and I love that. But before we get into this conversation, Rebecca, I want to provide some context. So guys, to my listeners, to my audience, I met Rebecca at the PodFest conference 2024 that happened in Orlando, Florida this past January. And I don't remember what made me come across you, but maybe I was drawn to you. I can't remember the exact moment, but I remember she pulled me aside and she pretty much gave me a 30-minute coaching session that I am forever thankful for. And one of the things she mentioned, it was that she specializes in teaching people how to be happy regardless of their situation. And we talked about minimizing our expectations. I even think you said as far as removing your expectations, if I remember correctly. And so I was very intrigued by this approach, so much so that I was like, I got to have you on my podcast because I want to learn how to do this. And I know that many, 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 many other people want to learn how to continuously be happy, irrespective of their current situation. So I would love for you to share about a difficult moment, time, period in your life what that situation was, how you overcame that particular situation, and most importantly, what did you learn from that particular situation as well?
I have so many. Where do you want to start? Let me give you one of what the world would say is the most tragic. In October 2018, now let me just go back just a little bit. I've been practicing this happiness. Let me just go back really, really quickly. When I was younger, you know, when you blow the candles out on your birthday cake and you make a wish, I always wish for the same two things. I wanted to live to my potential, and I had no idea what that meant. And I had no vision. I just said I want to live to my potential, and I wanted to be happy. So I've been studying this for a long time, 45 years. I'm 68 years old. Don't tell anybody.
Don't look it.
Thank you. Let me share. Now let me go fast forward to 2018. October 2018, my mother died. And 2 weeks later, 2 months later, I found out that she gifted the family house to her handyman.
Wow.
Exactly. To her handyman. Now, after all of this practice, for the first 2 weeks, 4 weeks, I was turning and twisting, even with the practice. And the reason, one of the reasons, I'm just speaking for myself, that all challenges come is to, especially if I'm claiming to be a happiness specialist, is to give me more things to practice. When I found out that she gifted the house to the handyman, number one, I started blaming. Blaming the mother, blaming the attorney that drafted a Fourth Amendment to the family trust in secret, and blaming the handyman. But it took me a little over 2 weeks to start laughing at that. That's a funny story. First of all, happiness specialist, mother dies, house goes to the handyman. But what I needed to learn is, number one, I had expectations. I had expectations of getting that house with all of its content. Number two, I was blaming my mother, the handyman, and the attorney. Number three, I had attachments to things, attachments to material things. I had attachments to an outcome. If I'm claiming to be a happiness specialist, none of those programmed behaviors, I mean, all of those programmed behaviors have to be eliminated. And so with time and with a lot of trust, I was able to laugh and able to look at that whole experience, which by the way, is still going on. I did get the house back, but I'm suing that attorney. It's 6 years later. It's still going on. So what is my other practice? Patience. Everything happens when it's time to happen. Not sooner, not later. And quite frankly, I could have the attorney over for lunch, the handyman over for lunch, my mother's gone, but I don't have any ill feelings toward them. They were here. They're part of my journey. They're part of my journey to grow and to expand my consciousness to get to the point where it's nothing personal. All of that wasn't personal. It was a setup for me to grow.
Wow. There's a lot to unpack there. So there's something that you just said where you said, I'm going to paraphrase your words here, so forgive me. Everything happens within in its own timing, right? You said something to that effect. So do you ever feel like you don't feel like we ever miss opportunities? Because if you believe that, you feel like if it was meant for us, it would have transpired. Would that be a fair assumption?
You're absolutely right. Whatever is meant for you is going to happen for you. I do not buy into, I'm sabotaging, self-sabotaging, or I'm blocking my abundance. Or what's the other one?
energy blocks, chakras. No, you think that if God wants something to happen to you, happen for you, that you can do anything to stop it. But see, the world teaches, the world sells dissatisfaction, and the world teaches that there's something I'm doing. No, you're not doing anything. You're not doing anything when there is nothing that is not in order. But the programming is, yes, I'm doing something. I'm not deserving. I'm not worthy. No, it's just, if something hasn't happened, it just means it's not supposed to happen or it's not time for it to happen. And that practice comes with trust and surrendering to a divine plan that's even bigger than I could ever imagine.
Understood. So here's a big question. I know that a lot of people who listen to my podcast, that tune in for each episode, or people that might just be intrigued for when this particular episode drops. Why do we as human beings struggle with happiness? Specifically, what are the common factors or triggers that seem to consistently undermine our happiness? Like some people might say social media is another one that they use as an example, but yes.
What a great question. It's just one reason. We've all been programmed. In fact, not to plug, but in fact, in 2 months, my latest book is going to come out. It's called Programmed for Unhappiness. Exposing the Untold Truth. It's all about the programming. It's all about what we were taught at birth. And I'm up to 55 programmed behaviors, 3 different levels that subtract from your happiness. And so the practice is to, when you really commit and begin to prioritize again, and it is an energy that you're prioritizing, like, oh, I'm happy. It's an energy of, yes, peace and contentment. That's where I want to stay. That's where I want to be rooted. When you prioritize that, then you put a spotlight on all of those programmed behaviors. May I give you some examples?
Mm-hmm. Please do.
Different levels. You know, I say level 1, level 2, level 3. Level 1 is for, I call them civilians. Anyone can understand. I have 55 level 1 programmed behaviors. Blaming anyone or blaming your circumstances for how you're feeling.
So that's a program. That's what you're referring to as a program.
Everything that I'm going to say is a program.
Understood.
Everything I'm going to say. Comparing yourself to others. Mm-hmm. Trying to control anything outside of yourself.
That's a big one.
A bigger one. Taking anything personally. Question, do you worry?
I do.
You were programmed to worry.
How was I programmed to be worried?
You didn't pop out of the room knowing how to worry. Mm-hmm. So go back to when you were 6 months, 1, 2 years old. You didn't know how to worry. You were taught. So you were programmed to worry. And there's only 2 reasons why people worry. Number one, they're programmed. And the second reason is lack of trust. You can't trust and worry at the same time. Which one are you choosing?
That's good. My mind, my thoughts are percolating here. So I want to take a step back here because you're saying a lot of good stuff here. Right. So let me paint a scenario that's probably common for a lot of people, whether they experienced it personally or not. Let's just say that person has received some form of betrayal, whether, you know, their partner did something that they were supposed to, a company betrayed them, or in the case like yourself, where the lawyer did something underneath the table, right? Are you saying that person shouldn't have trusted in the first place? Like, how do you prevent yourself from, because to me, I guess where I'm getting a little bit perplexed is if you trust somebody, that means you do have a level of expectation.
Now, hold on, my dear new best friend. I didn't say trust somebody. I said trust the universe, trust God.
Okay.
I'm not trusting a person, a human. Are you kidding me? No, trust God.
Fair. So don't trust a person, trust the universe, trust God, that it will work out as it's supposed to.
Exactly.
So those programs that you just mentioned, would you say those are the top five, top four, I think you gave me? Would you say those are the most frequent ones based on your research and interactions with folks?
I said there are three levels. That's the easiest level I was just talking about. Let me just share some more. How about this one? Rushing. That's a program. Being patient. Being critical of yourself or others. Fear. That's a program too. Believing that I can make a mistake. There are no mistakes in nature. I don't use the word mistake. I don't use the word should. Should is a judgment.
So what are you saying as an alternative to should? What's your language like?
Inspired. There is nothing I should do, only what I'm inspired to do.
This is interesting. And so, no, I'm so into this. You have no idea. So for the person listening to this right now that's trying to digest, they want to lean in, what's step one?
That's a great question. I just got chills when you asked me that question. The first step is acceptance. The first practice is acceptance. Acceptance of yourself, acceptance of where you are, acceptance of the journey, acceptance of the process, acceptance of all of it. The suffering comes when I resist. The moment, this shouldn't, I'm using air quotes here, this shouldn't be happening. Something is not right. This is an unwanted moment. And I'm here to tell you there is no such thing as an unwanted moment.
No such thing as an unwanted moment. Okay, go on.
Now, we have two entities. Mm-hmm. We have the ego and we have the universal. God, whatever you want to call it, universe, you want to call it God, because some people have a problem with saying universe, some people rather God. It does, the words, try to let go of the words put your seatbelts on this one. Put your seatbelt on and put your dash helmet too, because on level three of 55 programmed behaviors is, question me, my dear young Corey, do words have power?
I feel like this is a trick question coming from you. I'm going to say what I normally would say. And I'm going to say yes.
Exactly. And the program is, yes, words have power. But innately, words do not have power. If I cursed you out in a different language, you wouldn't be insulted. What has power is energy. Don't tell me stringing letters together has the ability to make me feel or down, happy or sad. No, words, you can call me any name in the book. And that's another thing, this whole myth about, you hurt my feelings or I'm offended. No, you're responsible for your feelings. That's why I don't have any friends, because I teach self-responsibility. But who's watching? Oh, here we go. If I said, I have the answer to all of your problems and all of your challenges for the rest of your life, would you be interested in hearing this solution?
I would.
I got it right here. Hold on a second. I'll show you.
I'm holding on. The mirror. She's holding up a mirror to those that are listening to me right now. That is what she's holding up. A mirror to look upon myself.
You have that much power. No one can insult me. No one can compliment me or insult me. So there's a difference between being a, and I'm maybe getting off the track, but there's a difference between a sun, a star, and the earth and the moon. The sun, the earth needs the sun. to survive for life. The sun doesn't need the earth. So the practices be your own entity, your own energy. You are a single source of your own vibration, your own self-contained. That's what I wanted to say. Self-contained. Nothing out there can affect you. But again, this is a practice. I said 45 years.
Right.
In practice. And I don't have everything mastered. But I definitely know what's a program and what I practice eliminating, because all programs subtract from your happiness, every single one.
Right. And so you mentioned that we don't come into this world with these programs. So we're learning it, whether it be from our parents, their family members, society. But my question is, the program must have came from somewhere. So, I mean, I don't know if, like, where does this program come from? How did we get here mentally? I'm just curious to know.
Okay.
Yeah.
I started answering it before, and then, you know, that this is what happens sometimes because the conversation is so
dynamic. Yes.
Yes. So there's two entities. We have the universe and we have the ego. You know the difference? There's the ego's job, which is all a program. The ego is all programmed. Now, the ego has a function to keep us out of danger, to make sure we take a shower, hygiene, go outside and look decent. We're not. Sometimes I do wear plaids with paisley, but that's another story. So that ego, it's got one job. And that job is to make a person feel as bad as possible for as long as possible. Mm-hmm. To make you believe that that is my identity. I'm identifying with the ego. No, I don't identify with the ego. I identify with the universe and or God. And I know which voice is talking. Mm-hmm. If I'm feeling less than, that's ego.
Because you're already enough.
Thank you. And I already have everything I need in every situation. See, the ego is, its characteristics is to be in a state of discontentment.
Right.
All the time.
So if step one is acceptance, what's step two?
Step two is trust that everything is happening for your betterment. Trust that everything is unfolding in the exact amount of time. Now you go out in nature or take a baby that's being born. Mm-hmm. The baby isn't 2 weeks early or 2 weeks late. The baby is born when it's time. So for me, the practice is letting go. I let go of all of my wants and desires, because that's all ego. This is what I want. This is what I desire. And surrender to whatever you want for me, God. That's what I want. Do I know what that is? No, I don't. But that's okay. I can sit back and wait and be patient for this divine plan that is not my ego. Sometimes it coincides, but for this divine plan to unfold. Let me ask you a question. What would be your dream car?
I'm going to say a BMW i8.
What color?
It's blue.
White, dark?
Light blue.
Light blue. So you have your dream car. Mm-hmm. You're sitting in the passenger seat. Mm-hmm. Who's driving?
I'm going to say a best friend.
No.
If I'm in the passenger side, who else would be driving?
God.
I see what you're doing here. I understand now.
So you're not driving. hands off the wheel. Enjoy the view. Enjoy the scenery.
Right. So I get how this framework can definitely apply to those living in, let's just say, for lack of better terms, the Western world. But would you say that same mentality applies to someone that's living in a country that's at war? You know, whether that be, you know, you're in the Gaza Strip, or you're in the Ukraine, or you're in any one of several African countries that are in some type of civil conflict, would you still have the same approach to those folks? Have that mentality that just trust that this will work out? This is all for your betterment?
That's a very good question. And I probably should have said earlier, I don't do philosophical questions or hypothetical questions.
Fair enough.
What the individual, mm-hmm. wherever they are, I mean, Mandela spent, 26 years in a prison cell, correct?
Correct.
And he came to the same conclusion. He found peace in a prison cell. So it really comes down to an individual's openness. And you know, now that I'm thinking about it, because I've got cobwebs, I live in the present moment. It's very difficult for me to go back. But there was a movie that was done. It's called A Beautiful Life.
Okay.
Yes. A father and a son living in a concentration camp. And how the father made sure that son didn't feel like, seem like a concentration camp. And poo-pooing on any of the tragedies, none of that. This is an individual, and I'm not making any comments about what happens. But what I do trust is that everybody on this planet has their own unique journey.
Mm-hmm. Fair. So, are there specific life stages or transitions where people tend to experience more challenges in maintaining happiness based on your experience? And if so, why? Like, for example, you know, some people might say that when they get kids, that might be a certain life stage. Or do you not think that life stage makes any difference whatsoever?
Life stage has nothing to, if they're programmed, they're going to have program problems. But for me to be of more service, if you don't mind sharing some of your challenges.
Okay. I am an overthinker. Big one. I've gotten better over the years, but I still fall into that trap of overthinking a situation.
And so for your first part of the practice is what?
Acceptance.
Acceptance, exactly. Acceptance without judgment of who you are, what you're doing, where you are. Acceptance without judgment, overthinking.
Yeah.
And that overthinking is all authored by, controlled by the ego, which keeps you in a loop. See, the ego loves drama, and overthinking is just drama. And guess what the ego needs more than anything? It needs to be fed. It needs to be fueled. Mm-hmm. So the practice, the first part, acceptance, and the second thing, I'm not pretending to do all of this by myself. I, hands up, this is very simple, and I'm a simple girl, hands up, palms up, universe, how do I let go of overthinking? And that's it. And you know, when you ask how, you ask that question how, you always get an answer. You see, there's a part, and I'm going to use another example. There was a woman that was in one of my classes. I teach these classes, The Truth About Happiness, and she was fearful of everything. And she was a doctor, and when she went out of the house, she was afraid she was going to get mugged. When she was in the house, she was afraid of a home invasion. Mm-hmm. fearful. And I said, well, do you watch the morning, do you watch the news? Yes, I have to know what's going on. So see, here we go. Now, not only is she fearful, but she's addicted to the fear, addicted to the overanalyzing. If I said I can eliminate your fear in 2 seconds, it would be like cutting off her arm. So there is the ego is tricky because it puts you in a state and then you think you need that state and the whole drama of it all. But when you say, you know, but then the relationship with the ego, my relationship with my ego, I befriended it. I say, I know what you're doing. I see you're trying to make me feel like crap. I see that you're trying to keep this negative story going. By putting my ego on the stage, you've ever been to the theater? I just put it on the stage and I'm in the audience and I pretend that I'm watching a movie of drama, of ups and downs, of good and bad, all of it. But it's not me. You're not overanalyzing. Your ego is overanalyzing.
This is interesting. So if step one is acceptance, step two is trusting in God or the universe, right? What's step three?
Step three is letting go and be patient with the process of growth. And not expecting an outcome, not expecting anything, not expecting, but just, this is my journey. I'm here to experience. In fact, that's why we're here. We're here to experience this journey. But what happens is, I'm going to judge this journey. It's not happening fast enough. This is not what I want. This whole humanness is a dimension of experience, nothing more.
So here's what my brain is noodling on. So are we incorrect in, like, when people take, I'm using the experience of marriage vows. Is that an incorrect process based on this line of thinking? Like, we're making these vows or statements to us because we're asking each other in that moment to trust each other, obviously also trust God or the universe, depending on how you perceive that. But are we setting ourselves up for failure when we do that based on your line of thinking? Just help me through this. I'm trying to take all of this in here.
Let me say something. This whole concept of marriage and what marriage is supposed to look like, what marriage is supposed to feel like, is all another program. Two people, they make a decision, a decision. Number one, when you say you love someone, I love you, but if you, then the word is cheat, which is another, that's another big bottle of wax to open up. Is it bottle wax? Whatever it is. There are people that are, okay. Scratch that. The only reason, but I mean, 68. I don't know of any happy marriages, do you?
Transparently, probably very few. But then again, how do I really know? But I'll just say very few. That would be my answer.
And let me say, it's not a judgment of that. It's because people get married because it's programmed. When you get to a certain age, that's what you are supposed to do. Get married. That's the program. And then after that, I remember when I got married, get married. And then a year later, when you're having children. I mean, breaking the program. So does marriage, the way it's set up, traditionally work? Not for the majority. That's my opinion. But see, here I am again with another hypothetical. But it only doesn't work because of the programming coming in, having expectations. If I put husband on as your husband, wife, there are expectations coming with labels. I mean, labels, all labels come with expectations. Right. So you're already That's already a situation ready to fail. I have expectations. See, I don't care if it's a husband. I don't care if it's your best friend, your children, grown-up children. I have zero expectations. And if somebody wants to do or be somewhere other than with me, okay, goodbye. And I wish you luck. But this relationship comes with conditions.
It does.
Yes. That's just a recipe for a disaster. Conditions and expectations.
Right. And so, and I think this is where I'm gonna make an assumption here based on how my listeners, my audience are thinking. And so are you essentially saying that human beings shouldn't have any expectations, just the expectation that God, the universe, will work things out eventually in our favor or what's right for us?
What I'm saying is it is an individual journey. If I meet someone that isn't accepting of me, says, you know, why don't you, or have suggestions for me to change, I'm not going to be around too long. Here we go. You wonderful people that are dating, when you meet someone, you want to size them up in less than 5 minutes. You ask them this question: what makes you angry? See, what happens is people have this dream, this ideal, but it's not real life. So if I meet someone and I ask them what makes you angry, then I know exactly who you are, what you like, what characteristics you have right off the bat. And if it's not compatible with my energy, it's not a match. See, a fish isn't going to be compatible with an elephant. A bird isn't going to be compatible with an alligator. So it's not, there's nothing wrong with people. It's just they're not compatible. But see, I'm going to speak for myself when I was a lot younger. I was trying to make a relationship with somebody that I wasn't compatible with. That's the question. What makes you angry? The other question, which I love to ask, and so when you meet someone new, you ask them, what did, because usually people have all been in long-term relationships, a year or 2 years, boyfriend, girlfriend, maybe they were married. You ask them, what did the other person say? What did the other person complain about you? What were their top 3-5 complaints about you? What were their complaints about you? Now you find out if the person, number one, is self-aware. You find out, number one, two, if the person can be honest. Or what I usually get is, well, I didn't have any complaints. I didn't have any complaints. They didn't complain. Well, now I know you can't be honest. You're not self-aware. So you already know. You look for somebody that's compatible. Everybody's going to be compatible with someone else.
Right. Right. And I also believe on that note, too, that people change over time. And so, you know, maybe in one phase of your life, you guys were very compatible. And then over a certain phase, you became less compatible or perhaps not compatible at all.
Exactly. And that's why when I look for someone else, either for a friend or even in a relationship, are you accepting of me? I may be like this today, and tomorrow I may be different. Now, see, it same goes to them. Am I able to grow? Am I able to grow with you? Am I able to change with you?
Okay, I'm getting this now. I'm getting this. Thank you for being patient with me. I appreciate this. My next question, Rebecca. So I once read that, and you could correct me if this is right or wrong. I once read that sadness is triggered from reliving the past, and anxiety is triggered from worrying about the future. So with that in mind, to what extent do, from your practice, from your experience, encounters with others, to what extent do past experiences, traumas, or unresolved emotional issues affect a person's ability to, you know, sustain their happiness?
Well, can you be sad and happy at the same time?
No.
Can you be anxious and content at the same time?
No.
See, quite frankly, that sadness, loneliness, that's another label. That's another program. I'm sad. Who taught these people? How who taught these people what sadness feels like? Who taught me, I'm speaking for myself, who taught me, because I'm lonely, I'm lonely. I lived in the middle of a forest for 5 years. I'm lonely, I'm lonely. How do I know what lonely feels like? Hmm. We are human consciousness having a human experience. And with that, humans have a lot of different emotions. For a variety of reasons, but I will be damned if I attach a story as to why I'm feeling a certain way. I will not attach, I'm sad, no, I'm just feeling, period. It's just like the tides coming in, you know, the ocean tides come in and out. We all are going to experience all kinds of feelings, but it's the programming that makes us, I have a preference. I prefer to feel like this. What's wrong with feeling another way other than, oh, a great day. Yes, all of the energy coming out. What's wrong with that other emotion where I really don't want to talk to anybody, where I want to sit in the house and hibernate? There's nothing wrong with that emotion too, but the program is to have a preference of emotions. And I'm here to say, embrace all the emotions without labeling them and without attaching a story as to why you're feeling a certain way.
Hmm. So if someone was to ask that person, like someone's to ask me, how do you feel right now? Wouldn't I be using a label? Because that's all, I guess, because I'm programmed. I'm going to say I'm happy, or I'm going to say, I'm okay. I'm not feeling that great. And you're going to say that's a program as well. But I guess I'm trying to figure out, like, wouldn't all our responses, so to speak, be a program?
Exactly. And that's why I'm here to expose it, because it is a program. So if you ask me, you even asked me today.
Yeah.
Those are very good. Of course, you didn't ask like that.
Yeah.
how you do? So I would answer, this is my answer. I'm human, I'm feeling.
Mm.
But see, everybody's not going to get it.
No.
Well, I know how to play the game. I'm feeling good. I'm feeling fine. I'm feeling great. But the truth is, I'm feeling, I'm human, and I'm feeling.
Gotcha. Okay. I'm getting there. This plane's almost landing. So go ahead. Yeah.
I wanted to say something. My best friend was very intuitive. We were talking about Prince. I'm going to Paisley Park in May to visit. Anyway, he was one of my favorite artists. Yeah. And my friend told me, he says, yeah, he died of sadness. He didn't die of any extra, he died of sadness. A person that could not, and I'm saying sadness with air quotes, a person that on stage, genius, but what happens off the stage?
Probably fine. No? Mm-hmm. He's probably fine off the stage?
Oh, I don't know. It didn't seem like it.
Mm.
But let me just back up. Yeah. May I share one quick story?
Please do.
Okay. This is my favorite. And this story is evidence that what I practice works. Have you ever heard, did I tell you the Walter O'Brien story?
You might have, if this is the successful rich guy you met at a conference.
I already shared it.
Yeah, shared it. Please do. That's a great story.
Okay. So you can Google him. His name is Walter O'Brien, and he's worth $50 million. He supposedly stopped terrorist attacks in the United States. He's the inspiration for the CBS show Scorpion, and he has a 197 IQ. So I went to a seminar, and he was there, and I was compelled, inspired to talk to him. And I went up to him, and I said, "Mr. O'Brien, may I speak with you?" He said, "Sure, of course." And said, "Hi, my name is Rebecca Norrington, and I'm a happiness specialist." And before I could say anything else, he told me, "I would never hire you to work in any of my companies because what you do is toxic." When he said toxic, I started laughing. That's number one. I said, "Toxic, please tell me more." In which he proceeded to tell me that not only was I toxic, but I wasted 35 years of my life studying happiness. I've contributed zero to the planet. Searching for happiness is delusional. What I've accomplished can't be measured. Therefore, I've accomplished nothing. I'm selfish. Now, why was I able to laugh at what Mr. O'Brien said? It's because of the practice. Number one, we talked about it earlier. Words innately do not have power. And anytime anybody describes you in any kind of negative way, they're really talking about themselves. Number two, it's never personal. I don't care if they're calling your name and calling you out of your name. It's still not personal. Number three, whatever anyone is calling you, they're speaking of themselves. I think I said that already. And there are 360 degrees in a circle. So that means practice having more than just one perspective. With that 197 IQ, Mr. O'Brien could only muster up one perspective. And I don't care what challenge you're going through in this life, your circumstances don't have to change. But if you change your perspective, you can shift your energy. So that's the practice. Oh, I forgot. What does the man with the hump in his back want more than anything else?
Sorry. What does the man with the
hump
in his back want more than anything else? To not have a hump? To feel normal?
What does he want? No. He wants you to have a hump too.
Ah, misery loves company.
Misery needs company.
I hear you. I hear you. This is good. It's good, and it's also hard to unravel because we've all had so much programming. So, you know, I'm 39, so you're competing against 39 years of conditioning here. So,
and let me tell you something. You're still a youngster. You're a whippersnapper. 39. I didn't get all this at 39. Look at how far ahead you are. Are you kidding? 39, you're a baby.
So I want to go back to something you said, because I know that my listeners are going to get really stuck on this one thing. Right? We're talking about relationships. And you said something at the very top of our conversation. You said, pretty much, we're responsible for our own feelings, the way that we emote. And so I'm going to speak for the person that's like, no, my husband or my partner, they played a part in my unhappiness, in my sadness, right? So I'm going to ask for them, because I know they're when they listen to this, they're asking that. You're saying that they play no part in the responsibility for my happiness. Hence that saying, I know it's a program saying, I know you're going to say it, happy wife is a happy life. That's one of them, right?
That's a bunch of baloney too. It's not your responsibility to make your wife happy. That's her job, but keep going.
So my question is, for those people that are stuck on that, because I know that's going to be a popular one, are you just going to say, well, you're solely responsible for your own feelings and that's it. Like they have no play, that their partner has no part, no influence. Let's just even say that that partner is great at gaslighting, all that type of stuff. They're still responsible. That's it.
I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but yes, that's what I'm saying. Number one, look at this. Level one, blaming anyone or any circumstances for how you feel. It's never, see, that's the lie that's been told. It's someone else's fault. That's the programming. It's you said something. You didn't respond to my text. You didn't call me. You whatever you no. Look in the mirror. You chose this person. And quite frankly, if you pick someone and they aren't compatible with you, whose fault is that?
That's my fault.
There's nothing wrong with them. This is who they are. The only reason, there's only one reason why people have problems in relationships. Lack of acceptance of the other person exactly the way they are. I mean, come on, I was married. Valentine's Day, you didn't get me flowers dating. What are my flowers? Having expectations of someone else. You'll never, it's going to eventually, you're going to eventually crash into the wall, expecting someone else to make you feel a certain way. Just get ready for the bomb to drop. And it always does. See, I'm talking about self-responsibility. If someone comes into my life, and because that's just being needy. I need someone else. And that's just, see, when you need someone else, that means you're not, you don't take responsibility for self. And nobody's teaching this. Nobody's talking about it. Are they?
No.
Thank you. But you are.
Rebecca, this is good. It's good, but it's also controversial. I kind of like it. I kind of like it. So I want to noodle on this thought just a little bit more, because this is a popular one, right? And you probably know this from your practice. So, okay, I am responsible for self. So that means that I need to start figuring out how to make myself continuously happy, so therefore I am not depending on even my partner to keep me or to make me happy. Because you said that first step is acceptance, right? Is that the right framework? Is that the light or guide me through how this person could get on that journey of saying, okay, I can't depend on my partner, or you said I shouldn't use the word shouldn't. My partner is not responsible for inspiring me to be happy. So the question I'm trying to ask you here, Rebecca, is, are there steps to figure out how they make themselves happy?
We talked about it earlier. First, you have to decide, are you a planet or are you a star? If you're a planet, you're going to be needy. You're going to need the sun. You're going to need the energy. You're going to need other things too, just like the earth needs the sun. If you were a star, you're self-contained. So what are you? What do you want to be? And I'm not pretending that this is easy. 45 years of practice, this is not easy. I had expectations of every person I dated. Until I went on this journey of finding inner peace and contentment and discovering that it has nothing to do with anyone else but what I practice. And then you will be able to attract. See, needy, water rises to its own level. Needy attracts needy. Self-contained attracts self-contained. Another thing that I do know, I've taught these classes, The Truth About Happiness, in California, in Oregon, and now in Nevada. And I start off the class, warning, your buttons will be pushed. You will be triggered. You will say, something's wrong with her. I hate her. All of it. I've been yelled at. I've been called every name in the book. And that's just part of it. When you have a trigger, when your buttons are pushed, oh, it's my responsibility. There's a reason for those buttons and those triggers, to do more discovery, to do more deep dive. What is the least common denominator? But see, that's how powerful you are. It's freedom.
Freedom. Self-contained equals freedom. Okay. Got it. Okay. So, Rebecca, to the person listening right now that's in it deep, real bad, maybe it's a divorce, maybe it's the loss of a loved one, maybe they lost all their fortunes, an illness, what have you. What would you say to that person if they were your client? What's the first thing you would say to that particular person in that situation to help them to sustain their happiness in despite of their current circumstance?
Again, we start with acceptance. Let's go to death. Let's go to the whole program surrounding death.
Please.
The program is, death is a loss. I've lost something. Death just means change. The program is, death is a loss. I want to show you something. I have an only son, and you can describe. I have an only son. And prior to my father's death, I'm also a fitness instructor. And so there was a woman in my class, and she was dying of cancer. And she was a mother of an only child. I have an only child, so I was feeling connected in that way. And she was dying of cancer. And it was about almost three years, you know, she started to come back, and then of course the cancer, and she started to feel better, but then the cancer came back. And this woman died. And her only daughter, I went to the service, and her only daughter was inconsolable, crying, screaming, my mother, she had 2 years to prepare. I'm thinking, this is one of my thoughts. You had 2 years to prepare your daughter for your own death. And I'm just looking for this really quick. Okay. And she didn't. So when my father died, I consciously made a decision that I wanted to give my son a different perspective, a different way of responding to my death. As a parent, I felt that was very important, to respond to my own death. Not to say that he can't cry or wail or all of those emotions, but I also wanted to give him another option.
Right.
Can you see this? Let's see. Can you see this picture?
Yeah, I can see it. Yeah.
Okay, that picture was taken in 2008 on the beach, 1 hour after I buried my father.
Wow.
So the picture is of me and my son on the beach. I've got a sun hat on. He's hugging me. And at that moment, he asked me, he says, "Mom, how do you feel? How do you really feel now that Gramps is gone?" And my father was a jokester. And I said, "Gramps is dead." And we both laughed. And we took that picture. See, the programming is to be deflated. If you look at the kids, they're all the same. Sorry for your loss. My deepest condolences.
Yeah.
I'm just saying that there are other perspectives, and my message is this: stay open to all perspectives and be mindful of, am I programmed to feel like this? Am I programmed to act like, behave like this? Or can I be even freer to shift?
Right. So here's what I'm gathering from our beautiful conversation here. And thank you for being patient with me as I take in this new perspective. And it's funny enough, that word has been used several times throughout this conversation. And it also happens to be my favorite word in the English language. And so what I've gathered from this conversation here, Rebecca, is that we should be open to all perspectives and choose the one that serves us best in the moment, the one that most likely empowers us versus disempowers us, adds to us versus takes away from us.
Choose the one that shifts your energy. You can feel the difference. So let's take water. Water has three stages, you know, ice cube, iceberg, when it's melted, and then steam, vapor. Mm-hmm. So which state do you think is going to be more open? The ice cube, rigid, mm-hmm. water, flowing, steam. So where are you? Where are you rooted? See, the rigidity keeps you stuck. Being open gives you more opportunity, more free, more perspectives, more freedom, all everything that you said. So the practice is to remain open and find another perspective. Okay, so you're driving on the freeway. Somebody cuts you off, you know, road rage.
Happens.
Yeah, road rage. And so you're flipping them off, the nerve of them, safety, crazy. But what if you found out that they were rushing and driving recklessly? As they just got a call.
I see where you're going.
Only child is in intensive care.
Right, right. Okay.
Instant shift of perspective. Practice changing your perspective, because here we go. The ego will only offer you one perspective. Hmm. That's when you know you're stuck with the ego. One perspective. The ego can't come up with a different perspective. Only one.
I like that. And it's funny. I've heard a similar anecdotal story. And it goes, a father was on the train with his two little young ones. The two little young ones were acting all rambunctious, making all types of noise, playing. And the people around him was like, what's wrong with this guy? Can't he control his kids? Like, what kind of parent is this? Da, 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 da. And he was just kind of, you know, face down in his hands. And then someone said, hey, sir, can you like control your kids? And he's like, oh, I'm so sorry. I'm sorry. It's just their mom passed away. I'm just trying to figure out how to tell them. So that changes how you would approach that person, because you now have a different perspective of the situation. So I get it. That plane has landed. Thank you. Rebecca, so I'm going to end with three rapid fire questions. This is where I ask you something light, fun. You just give me the first thought word that comes to your mind. And that's it. What's one thing that really makes you happy?
Living in the present moment. Mm.
What's a book you highly recommend others read?
Anything by Dr. David Hawkins, starting with Power versus Force. Dr. David Hawkins, spelled Hawkins, Power versus Force.
Okay. And lastly, what's a quote or a mantra that you currently live by?
Happiness is a practice skill.
I knew it was going to be that one.
I have another one. You cannot have a happy ending to an unhappy journey.
You cannot have a happy ending to an unhappy journey. Wow. That's gold. Love it. So, Rebecca, if someone wants to reach out to you to be a part of your classes, your sessions, or they would like you to speak at their event, how does that person get in contact with you?
I have a website. You can email me from the website at rln@rebeccamorrington.com. You can find me on Instagram at Reality Spirituality, Twitter, RL Morrington. I'm on LinkedIn. I have a YouTube channel. I just started a show with my son, who happens to be your age. It's called Mother and Son Making Sense Out of Nonsense. Plus more. You can find me. You can Google my name. You can find me.
Awesome.
And I welcome all new people.
I love it. I love it. Thank you so much. So, guys, that concludes this episode of Three Questions with Corey Karim today. I think we had maybe 12, 13. I don't know, but they were all good. And hopefully you all got something useful out of today's conversation. But as many of you know, I like to end each episode by saying this. Sometimes you don't need to hear something new or see something new. Rather, you just need to hear or see that somebody else is going through it as well. So with that being said, Rebecca and myself are out. Peace and love. Until the next time. Blackwell.